Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you very much for joining us on the Detroit Football Network podcast with Justin Rogers. I am Stoney, and live, well, by the time you see this, it won't be live, but we are at Ford Field, where the Lions defeated the Seattle Seahawks, which is not improbable, although the way they've played against them the last few years, you might say it might be. But what's improbable to a certain extent was the way the game went down. 42-29, the winner being the Detroit Lions. They're 3-1 heading into the break. And Justin, this game was, I don't know, for lack of a better word, bizarre.
Yeah, and look, it is past 2:30, so I think hopefully people will excuse us. Your enthusiasm is fantastic for the hour, by the way. I just want to get that off the... Do we know if this was a scoregami? Has a 42-29 game ever occurred in NFL history?
You know what? I can probably look that up eventually, but, you know, I don't know. But it was just a weird, weird game with absolutely spectacular plays by both teams.
Yeah, look, fans got their money's worth tonight, right? Like, you pay a premium to get into a primetime game, and I think you got everything you could have hoped to have seen in terms of playmaking, offensive fireworks, a few defensive plays. The crowd was predictably into it the whole game, and I don't know about you, but the black uniforms are both weird, and I like them a lot.
Yeah, they definitely look nice. They probably look nicer on television than here, because especially where we are situated, it is very difficult to make out the numbers on some of the players. So that part I didn't like.
Well, it's certainly got to be better than the last uniforms, where it at times was impossible to tell between a 1 and a 7 and a 5 and a 6 and an 8 and a 9. I still have nightmares about it, but I think we've got to start by talking about this offense. You know, they have struggled through the first three games, I think is fair to say. Haven't scored more than 20 points in regulation to this point. And they had 21 by the half. And so, and not only that, they maintained it in the second half. You know, that has been... you know, the big problem is they haven't been able to put it together for 60 minutes. And I thought the game plan was perfect for what Seattle was facing defensively with three defensive linemen down. Started off with run, and then what more can you say about Jared Goff? Perfect. Yeah. Perfect today.
Exactly. The whole passing game was perfect. Amon-Ra St. Brown was perfect as well. By the way, Justin, it was not a scoregami. The score has happened one time before. I don't have the teams involved, but it was November 27th, 2005.
Oh, that's a little disappointing. I wanted to feel like I saw something that never happened today, but what are you going to do? But yeah, I want to stick with the theme of the offense, right? Like, so you come out and drive two, three and out in drive one, and they had a couple three and outs today, and I think that'll probably be the thing that Ben Johnson focuses on from this game, is they didn't avoid those three and outs. He hates them like the plague, and understandably so. But
one of them he has to blame himself for, I think, on the call was third down and one or whatever. And I had no problem with the fact that he ran the ball, but the toss play to Montgomery, I didn't like that play call at all.
I will let him know.
Oh yeah.
Tony, not approved. but look, they came out first series, three and out. They go to pass on third down, and very predictably, the sticky coverage of Seattle takes away all of Jared Goff's options. They showed the replay, I think, on the broadcast from a couple different angles, and there was just nothing cooking. He ends up eating the sack. And then what do they do on the second drive? They drive 93 yards. They hand it off 8 times to Montgomery and Gibbs, and it's just a quintessential Lions drive. I thought Goff did a really good job in this game of really fighting through all of his reads. There were a couple times where he just got rid of the ball really, really late because he was getting that third and fourth read. And, you know, that's a sign of a good veteran quarterback that has a good sense of his timing in the pocket, knowing where all his players are through the play. And, you know, those plays were some of his biggest in this game.
And the fact that Seattle did not have some of their guys, their studs up front, help the pocket stay up there longer where he had time to go for those other reads that who knows if, you know, Murphy and Leonard Williams and the other guy, Amafu play that, you know, maybe he wouldn't have had that. But, you know, the Lions had to deal with an injury on their offensive line with Frank Ragnow being there. So that kind of, I'm not saying it was, you know, 3-for-1, but still that stuff happens.
Yeah, I mean, both teams had a lot of injury issues today. It didn't feel like a week 4 game. It felt more like a week 13 game, which is some of the attrition these teams were dealing with. And, you know, Lions had a surprise injury pop up on the injury report yesterday or Sunday, or I don't even know what day it is. Never mind.
Yes, but Brian Branch.
Whatever. Brian Branch popped up late on the injury report with an illness, not concussion related, just to clarify for those concerned. He is out of protocol, just likely dealing with, you know, the stuff that's going around that I feel like has hit the locker room, has hit the media room, you know, probably more of a flu bug than anything else. I would not expect this to be a long-term issue at all with him.
Hopefully not, because they definitely, as we'll get to the defense, could have used him today.
Yeah, I thought Brandon Joseph stepped up and played adequately, but
yeah,
you know, these were two very loaded offenses. I mean, on paper, just weapons galore for both Seattle and Detroit, and the defensive injuries on both sides for the Lions. It was Branch and Barnes and Davenport that they're, you know, navigating the new way of life in some extent with that. Seattle was able to exploit that, and you know, it shows that, you know, the Lions have some work to do, I guess, to get back to looking like the top 10 defense that they look like to start this season. But certainly, you know, the thing that I'm coming away with most encouraged from this game was the offensive performance. You know, we were waiting for that complete performance, and in almost every way they delivered it today. And you still feel like, as weird as it sounds with 42 points, that there's meat left on the bone.
Well, you mentioned the 3-and-out, so yeah, there's definitely meat in the bone. What I loved about the offense was, A, everybody got involved, and B, the creativity of Ben Johnson again. The play, the Alcatraz, as Amon-Ra St. Brown called it, where he throws the pass to Jared Goff, that was a phenomenal play. And, you know, the J-Mo play, I don't think it was designed to go 70 yards, but it did. And it was, when you watch the replay, it was just, he waited perfectly when to throw the ball, got him in space, got him in stride, and boom. And that was a creative play.
So obviously the Alcatraz play, the pass to Goff is, you know, peak creativity. You know, for all the jokes we make about Jared Goff's mobility, he's made some plays with his feet, and now he's made a play with his route running. And a couple different things about that play. One, I thought the route was sold well by Goff. You know, he did what you often do in a handoff, and he kind of slowly jogged away from it to avoid unnecessary hits from the defense. And then, you know, it was like a classic lure the defense in before accelerating into the open field. But even more impressively, I'm on our St. Brown's pass was incredible. Oh, I mean, he had touch on it, and, you know, just dropped it in the bucket, as the announcers like to say, and just such impressive execution all the way across the board for that play. Because the defenders, I don't want to say read it, but certainly saw it late and got in the path, and very well could have made a play if that pass wasn't as perfect as it was.
Well, what's crazy about that play is, as it was developing, in my split second of nitpickiness, as the play is going, and I see him throw the ball, and I'm saying, wait a second, I don't remember if it was J-Mo or Tim Patrick. Somebody else was wide open, like where between the L and the sideline of the end zone was. And I said, why isn't he throwing it? Touchdown. Okay, shut up, Stoney. You know, I'm saying to myself in my mind. But there was another guy who was wide open. But then I said, wait a second. The play was, he's got to throw the ball to Goff. So that's why he made the play. And to your point of dropping in the bucket, the play is set up that if it's not a great pass, it's going to be incomplete. There was no way that ball was going to be intercepted.
I like that you're complaining that St. Brown did not progress to his second and third read. It's a little irrational, but
I know.
And I do want to go back to the JMO play, because he actually had a very quiet day. only had the two targets. He had one on a comeback later, but I think what is really encouraging, you know, if you go back and you watch the Arizona game, is they dropped into these cover fours and these cover threes and these Tampa twos all game long. And so he was just running go ball, go ball, go ball, go ball. And there was nowhere to go with it. And, you know, that's nice. It opens up stuff underneath. There's still always going to be value to Jameson Williams, even when he's not getting the ball. But ultimately, you want to find ways to get the ball in his hands. And when teams are running those deep zones, it gets really tricky. And so I thought it was really encouraging that Ben Johnson found a way to get the ball in his hands in a different way. And I just think deep overs, you know, those deep crossing routes are an absolute weapon. Every team in the league uses them. Some teams use them relentlessly. Tampa was certainly a team that does that a lot. It's just such a great route because it really stresses out a team's zone defense. And if they can't defend it properly as that player drifts from zone to zone, and with Jameson's speed, like that's tricky to do. Like, I just think it's a tool that they need in their play calling when the straight vertical route is taken away.
Yeah, and he's so freaking fast. And like I said, when you get him in stride where he's not having to reach and all that, that's when he's able to just, you know, shift it into another gear. And the next thing you know, he's dunking the football. And now, I'm sure Dan Campbell didn't love the fact that he got a 15-yard penalty, but, you know, Bates making the extra point, that was okay. But, you know, I listening to him explain why he did it, I'm paying homage to Calvin. And also, as he says, there were people in the, and I'm using this word correctly, quote, the facility, who didn't think he could dunk a football.
You know, I don't know. Like, his youthfulness and naivety and immaturity or whatever, in some ways, it's endearing. Like, he's like a big kid. It's very much like when Darius Slay was here, you know, doing things that, like, sometimes you're like, it's kind of stupid, but, like, he's just having fun, right? And I hate
that's a great that's a great analogy, by the way, especially Slay young in his career, you know, early in his career, because he's more mature now, even though he's not as good as he was. But yeah, you know who else I want to mention with just sticking with offense here? You know, he only caught two balls that were thrown to him because there was no incomplete pass. It's Tim Patrick.
But, yeah, I'm on the Tim Patrick train.
Yeah. And I thought it was kind of interesting that Allen Robinson was even activated for tonight's game. Didn't play, but that he was active. But Tim Patrick is going to be a secret weapon for this team.
I think I mentioned this on a previous pod. I was not all that familiar with Patrick's game, you know, and I had to sit down and I had to watch some of his tape and kind of learn what he was about. That. And you know, talking about another guy that runs those deep over routes and he's got a feel for zone. He really knows how to get into short zones and turn around and give his quarterback a big target right away. And Ben Johnson said something, I think it was this week, honestly, that they're still kind of figuring out each other, you know, and what Patrick does best and how they can best utilize him in the scheme. And look, I think you saw a good little bit of that today. You know, he had the shallow cross where he's just a physically imposing presence that's tough to bring down in the open field. And he turned that into a pretty big gain, 23 yards, I think, shortly after David Montgomery's murderous run.
Oh, we'll get into that. That was,
that was something. And then, you know, they used him on a deep post pattern. And I love the way he rounds out their receiving core. I just think it's a perfect fit. They were looking for a guy with size. They were looking for a Josh Reynolds replacement. They tried a couple guys and Darius Fountain and Donovan Peoples-Jones that just couldn't step up and fill it in that way. And honestly, like, I know how good Josh Reynolds was for this team. I won't take anything away from the contributions he had over the years, but I think Patrick's ceiling might be higher in terms of a guy that you could just absolutely trust to get it done in a one-on-one play when you need him to. And he's a bigger, more physically imposing blocker when, you know, it really boils down to it. So as long as he can stay healthy, I just think it's a great fit for the roster.
You mentioned the Montgomery play. He is. I mean, he was just. It was like once again. I think there was another play earlier in this year where somebody made a comparison. It was like a Marshawn Lynch play. I mean, he just pancaked people while I was running them with football.
He was incredibly important to today's win, and it started with the first touchdown. You know, they got first and goal at the four. Took him three tries to get in. The holes just weren't there. And then that third one, third and goal at the one, he got popped in the backfield. And most backs go down. And he did not. He had a defender dragging on his leg, and he willed himself into the end zone in kind of a play that we, you know, defines who he is. But that pass, that was one of those throws I was talking about where Goff progressed through all his reads and nothing else was open, and the check down was it. And that check down should have gone nowhere. It was about a yard, maybe two beyond the line of scrimmage. Devin Witherspoon, who is a very good tackler, was beeline to the ball, playing in a zone, just coming straight forward, full speed. Montgomery turned into him, and I do not know how, like, Devin Witherspoon is no more. I mean, he just left him in the dust. And I don't know. The photos, the still frames of that are just staggering to see how he, I know there's a size difference and a weight difference there, but it's not big enough for how that size difference felt on that play. Like, it was just, It was abuse. And then not only that, he continued to run. He broke two more tackles, 40-yard play. And, you know, it led, I believe that was leading into the Alcatraz play, correct? It was that drive. And so,
yeah,
just such a major impact in this game, despite a fairly modest stat line, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. If you don't watch the game closely enough and you see, oh, what's the big deal? 12 carries for 40 yards. Okay. Yeah, but as you mentioned, a lot of them were short yarded situations where you got the ball, and you're not going to get a lot of yards when you're getting the ball at the 2-yard line. And then one pass play went for 40 yards. So that has something to do with it. But another thing, when you're sticking with running backs, I think Jahmyr Gibbs tonight might have shown more than any other game I remember that he can run up the middle. It wasn't just Gibbs's speed. He found some cracks in the holes. And I mean, you look at his stat line, you know, 14 attempts, 78 yards. And Jahmyr Gibbs did not catch a pass. That was supposed to be most of his game, not most of his game, but a good portion of his, you know, arsenal, so to speak. And they didn't even throw to him.
Yeah, it's two games in a row, actually, too, right? He had the hook and ladder touchdown, but he wasn't right. Targeted in the last game either. So a little surprising on usage there, but, you know, who are you going to complain to at 42 points, right? But I think what I like about Gibbs is the willingness to run between the tackles has always existed. I think he defined himself almost immediately upon arrival that he was more physical than we expected, just based on the size, the scouting report. I mean, he really is a guy that's not afraid to run between the tackles and lower his shoulder and do damage. But I noted this after, I don't know if it was the Rams game or the Tampa Bay game, but he just doesn't have the same feel and vision between the tackles that Montgomery does. And that makes perfect sense, right? Like, I mean, right. Montgomery is unbelievable in a phone booth, the way he makes guys miss in such confined spaces. It's really his superpower, if you will. And so for Gibbs not to have that, that's okay. But it does feel like each week he gets a little bit better at that. And this was a really solid performance for him, top to bottom. And once again, I mean, that was the engine that made this thing run today. And Goff only had to throw 18 passes.
Right.
Threw 18 passes, and they scored 42 points.
And speaking of, you know, guys who are getting a little bit better, at least this season, Laporta, for, you know, four catches, you know, people, fantasy football owners want to see more, but, you know, yeah, we all do. But like you said, he only threw 18 times, but four passes, 53 yards. Brock Wright got involved, so that's six passes to your tight ends. They both of them blocked very well, so a really good performance by the tight ends.
Yeah. Speaking of fantasy teams, I'm sure your neighbor's doing okay with his St. Brown pick now with yeah. a touchdown catch and a touchdown pass. But I think it's just going to be this way every week. You know, you look at the box score, you look at the final results, and this was a really great example of just the ball being spread around all day long. You know, St. Yeah. Brown, 45 yards, Patrick, 52 yards, Laporta, 53 yards, JMO, 80 yards, Montgomery, 40 yards. It's, you know, the ball's just going a little bit everywhere. And, you know, when Goff's throwing 18 passes, I mean, with all those weapons, it's just tough to get maximum production out of them. So, you know, I don't think this team is going to be for the fantasy owners this year, but they should win a lot of football games with an offense this potent.
All right. Speaking of the offensive line, Ragnow, as we mentioned, didn't play. Glasgow played center. His position was taken once again by Owosika. How would you sum up the way the offensive line played, all things considered? I thought they held up and had a pretty good game.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of problems with it. They had one rough series. There was a play, I think, where both Sewell and Decker got flagged for holding on the same play. And the next play, Decker gave up the sack, which, pretty violent-looking sack. I know the fans didn't love it. It was the one where Goff got horse-collared in the pocket.
I never knew that rule. You're allowed to horse-collar quarterbacks as long as they stay in the pocket?
Correct. And I don't know for sure, but I think the logic is that when you're horse collaring somebody from a standstill, it's not as damaging or impactful to the legs, the knees, whatever. But Kirby probably should have horse collared Geno Smith on that blitz. Might have been able to bring him down instead of slipping right over the top.
Yes, indeed. Well, we've talked glowingly about the offense, as we should have. There's another side of the ball that was not as glamorous or as productive as the offense. We'll talk about the defense coming up after these. You're watching or listening to the Detroit Football Network podcast, and you can get this on Odyssey, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Defense coming up next. Welcome back to the Detroit Football Network podcast at Ford Field. Lions, as you know, defeating the Seattle Seahawks 42-29. The 29, it was not alarming. We talked about the great 42 that the Lions had. 29 points is not alarming. It's not good. But as far as the other numbers that the defense gave up, Geno Smith, 395 yards. He did pass the ball 56 attempts. To me, Justin, the number that stood out the most was 38 first downs. If you tell me that the Lions are going to give up 38 first downs and 516 yards, I'm trying to figure out how many points they're going to lose by.
It's a lot. 38 first downs. I did not know that. That is that's pretty staggering. Let me just say, I feel the same way about Geno Smith that I do about Baker Mayfield. Love the way that he's having this redemption arc, and it's so far into it. It's like he's already been redeemed. I don't know what else we need to talk about it, but what an impressive performance from him. You know, I just really blown away with some of his ability to not only avoid sacks, but to keep his eyes downfield. There was one play in particular. I mentioned it just before the break there with Kirby Joseph coming on the blitz and had Geno dead to rights, ducks under it. Now he's got Aiden, you know, on his tail. And the whole time he keeps his eyes downfield. This is a third down play, mind you. Keeps his eyes downfield and finds his receiver in a tight window between multiple defenders on the zone for 11 yards and extends the drive. And I don't know what the third down stats were. I'm sure that they were not good for the Lions.
Stats were Seattle was 5-for-10. And man, it feels. I know it seemed like it was a lot worse because the Lions were 3-for-6 as well. But yeah, it seemed like anytime they wanted to get a third down, they did, especially the parts of the third quarter where their offense just basically looked unstoppable. And look, a lot of it is, like you said, Geno Smith. A lot of it is, you know, their great receiving trio is really good and they have good tight ends as well. And by the way, as great as the Montgomery play was, that play by Kenneth Walker III I don't know. That should have been an Olympic event in the gymnastics. I don't know how he did not go down earlier. And it ended up, it was only, what, I think a 10-yard play. But it was incredible. The balance, the strength that he was able to do that with.
I've always fascinated when, like, basically dudes body surf to stay on their feet. And, you know, I think he absorbed basically two tackle attempts from Anzalone there to stay on his feet and pick up that first down. But, you know, so many of the problems I think the Lions had today was the way the game was officiated. And I'm not going to get into a debate on whether it was officiated correctly or incorrectly. I think I've made my opinions clear already on how I dislike how the NFL officiates defensive backs. It leads to games like this, but between Carlton Davis and Terry Arnold, 7 penalties today. And Lions are physical. I think you're going to see more games like this, but particularly when you're facing a physical receiver like a DK Metcalf, like, you know, the offensive players get away with pushing. They do.
Although they got caught. That was a huge penalty. There was 2 penalties in that drive. One was on the pick play. I think that was on Lockett. And then one was on Metcalf a few plays earlier for offensive interference that were huge. And they ended up having the punt, which was a big pull when Seattle had a little bit of momentum there. So, yeah, for the most part, you're right. But Seattle, they got caught finally for doing some of that too. But, yeah, the one on Arnold at the end, I don't know. That was like a great acting job by that guy.
I feel like he's getting closer. I understand he had 3 penalties today, but like there are more and more plays being made by him. And it's going to be 1 week where it's just going to flip. And I know development's not like that. It's not linear, but I just feel like there's going to be a day or a week or a month where it just kind of clicks for him in terms of, you know, stop relying so much on your hands. I talked to him in the locker room on, again, struggling with days here because the Monday night game is throwing me off. But I think it was Saturday. I chatted with Terry on a little bit. And I just said, hey, you know, like, what's holding you up here with the pass interference stuff? And he said, it was really interesting. I just hadn't thought about it. He goes, the ball arrives quicker at this level. He said the trajectory, he goes, is just a few degrees lower and the ball coming harder. And so like his timing, he basically was explaining like his ability to turn his head around, the timing just wasn't quite there on when to look. And I thought that was really interesting. I never had considered that, you know, NFL quarterbacks were throwing at a lower angled trajectory and the ball was getting there quicker. And you just, that's one of the many adjustments that you have to make. And so I do. I believe that, you know, with reps and experience, that's going to get there. Carlton Davis was both hilarious in the game. I say hilarious. He did probably not find it funny, but
yeah, he was pissed.
Yeah, boiled over for him, and he had to be pulled off of getting in the face of the official by a teammate, Jack Campbell, I believe. And he similarly could not control his opinions and emotions in the locker room after the game. He said he thought that the officials favored the Seahawks today. He said maybe he needs to take the officials out to dinner. Maybe he needs to follow him on social media. Maybe he needs to just sit down with him and hash it out. But he was not happy with how his physicality was officiated today. And you know, it'll be interesting if, you know, that does, you know, sometimes these conversations go up to the league level and the player meets. Remember, Sue famously met with the league yes. multiple times about how he was officiated. And so, you know, I'm curious because I think Carlton Davis has been really, really good for the Lions, but I don't know how he's going to feel about a game where he had 3 pass breakups, 4 penalties, and pretty sure he was the defender that was the last line of defense on the long Kenneth Walker run in the fourth quarter there.
Well, the elephant in the room, if you even want to call it that, as far as defense. Now, I don't know because I never really played the game at any level. Is it tackling or is it the angles that they took on tackling? Because I can't remember, maybe there were a couple games during the Patricia era when they gave up. Oh, but that was one of the worst tackling performances I've ever seen by a professional football team. A good team. They couldn't tackle. they couldn't wrap up. And it wasn't just, you know, linebacker. It wasn't just Anzalone or this guy or that guy. Even as you mentioned, now Geno Smith gets some credit, but there were times where they had him, they couldn't bring him down. But the angles on the Walker and some of the receivers were just abysmal.
Yeah, I would bet fatigue had a lot to do with it. There were a couple guys in that locker room that were, you know, 20, 30 minutes after the game, just looked exhausted. And I actually asked Anzalone about it. I was like, how do you sleep, you know, after a game like this, just with the energy and the adrenaline and all that? And he goes, oh no, I cannot wait to go to bed. He goes, I am exhausted. Like, just exhausted. 56 pass plays. Like, you are just running.
And so, and they went up tempo, because, and so the Lions couldn't substitute as often as they normally do. It was a really good, you know, coaching job by Seattle, especially in the second half when they went predominantly up tempo, and which I think really caused some of the problems. You're correct, but the tackling, I know Aaron Glenn's got to be really, really pissed off at that.
Well, the game. That doesn't take a whole lot. I mean, he's a guy that gets on edge in a delightful way. But that's, I mean, you want a coach that's hard, particularly on defense. So, look, I thought it was overall, you say 29 points is a lot to worry about. I agree, but, you know, I thought it was a disappointing performance. I thought they came into this game when they were performing at a top 10 level, and we knew there was going to be challenges in replacing Davenport and Barnes. And I think Branch more than any of them.
Yeah.
He's the glue, I think, that holds this whole thing together. But I thought it was a little bit of an underwhelming defensive performance. I thought they did a really nice job bottling up Walker in the first half. They made Seattle right left-handed. Like, they didn't want anything to do with running the football in the first half.
Right. You know, I think, five carries completely.
6 yards.
Yeah. And by the way, the play of the game, if you want to say if it was one play, was made by the Lions defense. The Campbell play, knocking the ball out of Metcalf's hand that what Davis recovered, that was a huge play early in this football game.
Well, that was a lot of that was Anzalone, right? Like, he's not going to get credit on the stat sheet for any of it, but Metcalf, as you well know, is an absolute load to bring down in the field. And he ran right through a couple tackles, very Montgomery-esque there, but Anzalone was able to grab the jersey, and it was one of those like almost comical ones where the jersey stretched out 4 feet, and Anzalone's riding water skis behind Metcalf, but it slowed him up enough to let Campbell basically just tee off, and that's what caused that fumble. So it was really a team effort there, turning a not so good play into a pretty damn good one. But I don't know. That Kirby interception, I understand, like, the comeback hopes were very slim for Seattle, but I don't know if there's there's a defensive back with better hands in the NFL than Kirby Joseph. I mean, that was a spectacular pick, and he is 3 now through 4 games. And, you know, he talked about wanting to lead the league this year, and I don't see any reason at this point why he can't. Like, the way he's being utilized within this game, on top of, you know, I think he deserves some credit for his personal growth in terms of how he sees the game, how he processes the game, and the plays he's making. It's just, he's been incredible, and I have to keep bringing it up every week, because it seems like every week he's making an unbelievable play, and there's so few times where I think, man, he made a blunder. I mean, obviously the missed sack was one today, but like, he's just not out of position in coverage very often, and it's I think been a really big part of their defensive turnaround is how well Kirby's playing this year.
I thought his namesake, you know, he's not a great player, but I thought, you know, Byron Joseph played okay. He was respectable.
Well, we gotta learn his name.
Brandon.
Okay, one of them. No, it's all right. It's all right. But look, he's
late. Second. 3:11 in the morning.
3:11. We're gonna. You get a pass for sure. You should just keep calling him a different name for the rest of the show.
I won't call him Joseph, I promise.
Brandon Joseph had a really good training camp, and he was a really good college player, right? And we talked about it with Arnold there that, like, the speed of the game in college is different, but his football IQ, I think, is clear. You know, he played for Notre Dame and Northwestern, so he's a smart guy. You don't go to those schools if you're a dummy. Six picks, 1 year at Northwestern, comes into this training camp, and you could tell that the IQ is starting to transition to the professional level. And he had this string of 3 or 4 days with an interception. You know, clearly was the number three safety in the depth chart throughout. The number four safety behind Melifonwu throughout camp. And you know, that's another guy I didn't think he was out of position at all today. You know, I think that's a really good sign, is you're in the right place to execute your job. Did he make mistakes? I'm sure. Everybody does. But, like, I look at that play where he was one-on-one with Metcalf in the end zone and he broke it up. And I said, that's a big-time play from a guy making his first start. So he stepped in. He had huge shoes to fill and certainly did an adequate job in filling that role. And once again, proving the Lions just have decent depth almost everywhere on this roster.
Somebody who didn't play a lot, I don't have the total snaps here. I don't know if that's came out yet, but he was called for two penalties. One was declined. James Houston made no impact whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, people got what they wanted today, right? Like, he was out there as a third down rusher, and you know, that's his bread and butter, right? You'd hope that he would find a way to make an impact, but two offsides. So it's not going to help his case. It's just not. You know, I think the Lions are already pretty down on him, and I don't think I'm telling you something you don't know. But you know, to commit two penalties and whatever the 10 or so snaps you play is, it's just going to set you back. You know, they're going to keep leaning on their other edge rushers. And I think we probably did see that through the second half. You saw Levi out there and Pascal out there in more of those third down situations. And so, I don't know. James Houston cannot seem to get out of his own way with this coaching staff.
And that's a problem, because I definitely think, and we all agree, that they could use a little more depth at that position, and who knows what's going to happen at the trade deadline. All right, coming up next, we'll put this puppy to pasture. And there are a couple of things I do want to mention, plays, not nitpicking, just some two plays in particular that I think are worth just shooting the shit about. All right, that's coming up next on the Detroit Football Network podcast. And welcome back to the Detroit Football Network podcast, along with Justin Rogers. I'm Stoney. Two little things I want to bring up from the game. One, I want to give the Seattle I want to give the Seattle Seahawks some credit for copying the Detroit Lions. Their version of the hook and ladder was pretty damn good too, wasn't it?
It reminded me of the, I don't know if you saw it, New England ran a very similar play this week. Very, very similar, more of a throw across the field type, lateral. And look, I'm here for it. I think it is potentially, an offensive evolution that is untapped. Ben Johnson talked about that a little bit this week when he was asked about why we don't see it more. I'm a fan. I think it's really something that's difficult to defend if executed well. And we saw the Lions execute it really well against Arizona last week. And this was, what was that, 3rd and 16 they converted with that?
Yeah.
So great, great play call, great execution. I think we're going to see more and more of it in the NFL, even if that means once every 5 or 6 weeks. It's more than we've seen it now.
Okay, and two little Stoney nitpicks. One's more serious than the other. The one that's not serious, the end of the first half, I would have liked to see them, you know, try to get into a position where they could just bring in Hendon Hooker and just let him throw a 70-yard Hail Mary rather than just take it to the half, because there was a penalty that the Lions, I believe, declined, and they could have moved up into that type of territory, if I'm not mistaken. And look at the play-by-play sheet. But that's something I said, yeah, what the hell? Because I don't. We know Goff can't throw it that far, and Hooker probably could. So that's something that would have been cool to see. Nothing big. The other one, though, is...
And it wouldn't you rather have seen Jake Bates attempt like an 82-yard field goal?
No. That I didn't want to, because that could get blocked. The other one that I think is a little more serious, and it didn't bite him, was one of the drives in the fourth quarter. I don't know if it was their second to last drive, where I was sitting next to 97.1, the Ticket's own Scott the Gator Anderson. I think it was, I forget which drive it was, where they refused, it seemed, to milk the play clock. There was about, it seemed to me, there was like two or three plays in a row where Goff was snapping the ball with like 15 seconds left on the play clock, and the clock is, so what are you doing? Why won't you milk the play? And I'm, look, I have a pet peeve as far as clock management, and that to me was really bad. Now, one side of me sitting there saying, you know, maybe they know their defense is just gassed, and they want to make sure that they, if God forbid, they need time and they get behind. But no, to me, you always in those situations, and there was, I think there was like 6 minutes left, 6.5 minutes left when this was going on. Because Gator even said to me, he goes, well, maybe they just do that once they get to 4 minutes. But it's like, and then when I believe they had to either punt or they lost possession, whatever happened. I said, see, there's a minute more or 45 seconds to a minute that Seattle has to play with that they shouldn't have had. So that's just a little pet peeve on my part. Is that legitimate?
Well, I'm going to let you yell at the clouds here because I admittedly, I don't know what you're talking about because it may have happened. I probably was a little too deep in the writing to catch that nuance.
Probably. I'll try to find it on the play sheet.
I do think that, you know, there is some merit to not running a play clock down to 1 or 2 seconds because it does let a defense tee off and jump the snap count. So I think there is some merit to snapping the ball with 4 or 5, 6, 7 seconds left. 15, if the clock is running, I think you have a point. I guess I have to go back and look at it. But, you know, I'm always here for your nitpicks.
Okay, yeah. I do a few nitpicking, yes. So, yeah. So you that's are, it.
Yeah,
that's
we should it. Get that on your business card, clock, yes. Clock management guru.
That's right. Well, not necessarily a guru, clock management, because I'm certainly not a guru because a lot of times I'm probably wrong on it. I'm just a clock management savant. No, I can't think of the word is right now.
No, it's now 3:20, so that's all right. I did quickly want to touch. We're going into a bye here. The Lions are going into a bye, and we're going to enjoy it with them. But they come out with a pretty brutal stretch, and it's 4 out of 5 games on the road. Got another chance at some vengeance next game with the trip to Dallas. The Minnesota Vikings are apparently very good. I watched a good chunk of that game on Sunday. Very impressed. Talk about redemption arcs. Welcome Sam Darnold to that club.
But it's a lot easier to be a redemption artist when you got Justin Jefferson, Addison back, Aaron Jones, and you have a defense right now where Brian Flores, anything he dials up works.
Well, Kevin O'Connell too. I mean,
yeah, that's, you know, I mean,
there's great coaches in this division, and he is certainly one of them. You know, we also got a road trip. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
The Dallas game, not you can sit there and say, oh, well, they're definitely going to win. Got a lot easier though with Lawrence and probably Parsons being out.
That would probably be ideal. For sure. Also got road trips to Green Bay and Houston. I expect Houston to have their business together, let's say, by the time that matchup rolls around, because that team is just too good to be playing the subpar football they are now. But it is quarter one. We see that quite a bit. But the Lions are in really good shape. I think people would take 3-1 of the break. I'm sure they'd love to be 4-0 with the way that Tampa Bay game went, but I think this team is living up to its early expectations, and this was a big one. I think just mentally, it was a monkey off their back to finally get over the hump with Seattle.
Absolutely, and I said before the season, as long as they're 3-1 at the bye, they'll be pretty good. And I don't want to, you know, you never want to say in the NFL we have a guaranteed win, but even though they won tonight, the Tennessee Titans should be a win here for that one home game on October 27th and that streak.
That's the
you want to compare quarterback. You want to compare quarterback stats between two games on the same night? Woo! It's unbelievable. We talked about what Geno Smith did and Jared Goff did. How about Miami with the great Tyler Huntley going 14 of 22 for 96 yards? Mason Rudolph, because Will Levis got hurt. The Tennessee Titans scored 31 points with 102 passing yards, and the Dolphins had a total of 78 passing yards. In the National Football League, there was a game tonight, 180 total passing yards.
Well, we got the long straw on that draw. much more enjoyable.
Yes.
Well, I will take us home. Want to thank Zach Clark, our producer, for putting this together and staying up with us super late tonight and probably a little later because he's going to polish this bad boy up. This podcast, as all episodes, can be listened to for free on the Odyssey app, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. And if you're done listening, you can always check out Will's work over at 971theticket.com or mine at the Detroit Football Network, and that's at detroitfootball.net. For Stoney, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.